Okay, I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, who is Chris from Ocean Beach.
All right. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
All right. I am nervous, so it's going to take me a minute to sink into this here. Can you guys hear me okay? A lot of Chris's. A lot of Chris alcoholics. That's not good. But I'd like to thank everyone who came out to do this with me tonight. Felt weird. A lot of people seemed to want to come, and I was just like, that's just, I guess the best way I could put it is I feel loved today, which is nice, because there was a time when there was no one showing up, and that's the truth. So thank you, and my sister is here tonight, which is awesome. It's Ashley, I love you, so thank you for coming out, and John, working on it. You invited me to do this, what, in February? So I had some time to think about it. I saw John at my home group, Monday Night Speakers group, back in February, and I kind of told him during the meeting or before the meeting that I was having a really tough time, and I was going through probably the most kind of pain I've been in sobriety. And so the next day I get a call from John, and he's like, hey, how you doing? And he ended up talking to me for an hour, and I thought, wow, this is really nice of him just to reach out and see how I'm doing. And he hangs up, and I was like, wow, that was really cool. And he calls back a minute later, and he's like, hey, so the reason I called was I wanted to see if you'd speak at South Bay Pioneers. And I said, are you sure? I've gotten to the point in my, this is scary for me, so I have said no to AA requests in the past, and I've gotten to the point where I don't think I'll say no anymore, but I won't say yes either, and that's what I was like, are you sure, you know? And he's like, yeah, I'm sure. I'm like, you've never heard me speak at a meeting. You never heard me speak. He's like, I've heard you share, and you do pretty good. And I'm like, dude, reconsider, man. Like, think about it. I've heard about this meeting, and I'll just say that it seems like John's shooting from the hip when it comes to picking speakers, so I don't know. How long have you been doing this? Had this commitment?
2 years.
When's the next group conscious? Yeah. So, no, thanks, John. I appreciate it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't love speaking, but I think one of the hard things about speaking is I know that I can't convey how much this thing means to me and what it's done in my life, and that's the absolute truth. I got a picture of my daughter here because I'm stressed. I'm an alcoholic. So essentially, you know, where my story starts is grown up in Ocean Beach, and it's good to be here in the South Bay. I love Imperial Beach. Imperial Beach is like what Ocean Beach was 20 years ago before it really went weird. And so I love this part of town, and growing up in Ocean Beach was great. And I think I was a pretty intelligent kid. I was athletic. I had a pretty good upbringing. You know, nothing I can identify as just like intense trauma or anything like that, but I just know that for me, I had a difficult time socially as a kid. I was incredibly shy, nervous, hated school, hated doing anything that would be like this, right? I hated it, and just was really uncomfortable. But I did well in a lot of things. And I remember playing sports, and I loved sports, but I just couldn't stand being on a team. I couldn't stand people relying upon me. I couldn't stand any kind of pressure. And it was about 11 years old when I was introduced to the ocean. I started surfing. And for me, surfing was this thing that was my fix. And it allowed me to escape everything that was going on land. I could have a relationship with the ocean. I didn't have to rely on anybody. No one was relying upon me, and I could do my thing. And it was my passion. And And that was really all I cared about for a long time. Till puberty hit. Puberty, I know for me, is when, like, shit hit the fan, you know? Because then I'm on land, and I've got a lot of stuff on my mind, right? I'm starting to care about what you think. I'm starting to look at, like, how tall this guy is in comparison to me. She's cute. I can't talk to her. Maybe throw rocks at her or something, you know? And just, like, I'm uncomfortable. And it was that time that, you know, around that time that people started drinking too. And I didn't want to be that guy. So my dad was an alcoholic. He got sober right before I was born. I never saw him drink, but I heard the stories. And he always kind of planted a seed in my mind as a younger kid. He said, hey, you know, if you go down that road, it might not work out well for you, if you know. And I was a good boy, you know. Like, I didn't want to, I knew my parents wouldn't like it. I resisted taking that first drink, but there became a point when it's just, I don't know how it happened. I remember my first drink in OB, it was a rite of passage, 40 of Old English. That's what you drank. That was it. And that was because Victory Liquor in Ocean Beach, there's a homeless guy there that would buy us booze, but he'd only buy us 40s because that's what he was getting. So that was it. That's what we do. That was the 40 of Old E, and I remember drinking that 40, and I was with a couple of people from Point Loma High that I didn't really know well, and a girl, and I remember drinking this 40, and it tasted awful. I was like, I can't believe it. What is this? You know, it was my first real introduction to booze, and so I drink it fast, right, because I just need to get this thing down, and I remember being at the bottom of the label. So clearly, I'm at the bottom of the label, and my head's doing this when you're talking. Like, starting to, I'm drunk, you know. And I'm telling them about how they're a bunch of wussies because they're only at the top of the label, and I'm at the bottom. And I'm sure they're just going, "Oh my God, this is not going to go good." And blacked out, woke up, or came to in a Jack in the Box bathroom, just wrapped around the toilet, and I was just like, "This sucks. This sucks." I didn't like it, and I don't think that first drink was an indication of I'm an alcoholic. I think a better clue to whether I was an alcoholic was the fact that I always drank like that. You know, it was never that form of drinking. I drink fast. I don't care what it is. The worse it tastes, the probably better it is. I'm gonna black out. I'm gonna wind up somewhere I don't want to be, and I'm gonna have an awful hangover. That was my drinking in a nutshell. And I didn't pull it. I always trip out, like in the Big Book, when you read like Bill's story or Dr. Bob's story or number 3. They drank for a long time, and I'm like, God, that's amazing, you know? Because by 18, I'd like burned it all down. I don't know why. I partied normally in high school, and I was around people who were, I thought, doing the same thing as I was, but I was getting in trouble. And it's like, now looking back, I didn't compare myself, but like, I think I'm still friends with a lot of these people these days, you know, today, and they still party pretty hard. And it's like, at some point they have an off switch. They must, right? Like, they're not going to jail. Like, all the time. So I don't get it. So there's something different there. And so I will say that drinking stopped working for me pretty early. And I always, when I mean drinking stopped working for me, what I mean is that I'd still get drunk, but it didn't take the discomfort away. It was like all the discomfort I felt before I had a drink would disappear for the time that I knew I was going to get a drink till about the fourth drink. And then all the demons would come back out, and it was like the rationality behind not doing crazy things was gone too, right? Because I was drunk, and I was, you know, by 18, I was not a pleasure to be around. I was losing friends pretty quickly because my behavior was insane. So I don't know. Yeah, it was nuts. But a lot of hurt. Like, I'll just say, yeah, a lot of hurting myself. I was like one of those guys who I get really drunk and it's like, why is Chris banging a bottle on his head? And it's like, because I break bottles on my head. I did it because I wanted to hurt myself, and I have a pretty pointy head that it just felt like a gift, you know? Like, it's like, it's kind of like a Klingon thing. So, like, I had a way of, like, getting real mad at myself, and I needed to make the pain stop because the booze stopped working it. And I would either cut myself or burn myself, or I break a bottle over my head, anything to just inflict pain on me, myself for one, and also just to reconfirm the self-hatred. It was like if my body wasn't a flag, I'd burn it, you know, type of thing. And it was intense self-loathing that I lived with on a daily basis. So at that point, I was really kind of starting to seek a solution. You know, I was like trying to figure out, my life's not working. I'm 18 years old. I got expelled from high school, and I'm needing to find a way out. And I'm seeing therapists, and I'm jogging, and I'm reading. I'm like, I don't know who to read, so I'm like reading about Einstein and Sigmund Freud, and I'm like, these people who are like really smart, right? Like, maybe they have like a way. They're all crazy, by the way. Like, I read Van Gogh's thing. I'm like, maybe Van Gogh has a solution. That guy was nuts. So I was seeing therapists, and I'd go in to see a therapist, and they'd be like, how's it going, Chris? And I'm like, good. And I'd be honest all the way up to the point to say, like, what do you drink? And I'd be like, no, you know, no. And they'd be like, they just look at me, and I'm just like sweating alcohol, and I'm all sucked up, and you could tell like I had a pretty serious cocaine problem at that point. and they're like, come on, man. And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, I just can't work with you, you know? I can't work with you. You're not being honest. And I was just like, yeah, I guess this won't work out, right? We're not going to hit it off, I guess. So, and that was the deal was, it's like, you can't get between me and alcohol. You can't. The only way I would even contemplate that happening was, I need to be fixed first. You fix my life, I'll give up booze. But I'm not going to give up booze before my life is fixed. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, the booze is all I have. Like, that's the closest thing I have to a solution. And so I get pawned off from one doctor to another, and I got pawned off to a doctor here in San Diego. And I remember going out to see him. It was the middle of the day, East County. I was wearing a black hoodie, black pants, black beanie. and I'm shredded. And I sit down with him, and he's like, how's it going, Chris? And I'm like, good. And he's like, you like to party? And I'm like, I don't know. And he just seemed like he was all relaxed, you know. He's like, and he basically goes, like, I like to party. And I'm like, yeah, you know? And he's like, all right. And I'm just like, what's this guy doing? And he's like, my type of party is the kind of party where you're in the bathroom the entire night. And I'm like, I know your kind of party, you know? I'm like, and he began to describe some other stuff. And what happened was he completely, for the first time, kind of disarmed me with identification. And I was just sitting there with him, kind of going like, what are we doing after this session? Are we gonna go get a bag or what? And he's like, but I don't do that anymore. And I'm like, oh, fucking nerd, you know? But what he did was so amazing. The next thing he did, you know, he said, hey, man, here's the deal. I don't care if you come back. If he's all, here's my cell phone number, here's my card. If you're ever at a point where you want to do something different, give me a call. And I walked out of there. And It took about 2 weeks. It took about 2 weeks for me to make that call, you know. And if he had approached this, and I love in working with others how Bill describes, you know, the process of talking to another alcoholic. Because if this guy had approached me any other way, I would not bought into it. He would not have had me, and he did, you know. And I called him, and he said, "Hey, man, here's the deal. There's a program up in LA. I'd like you to go. And it's a year long program. It's really cool. You're gonna go to all these awesome meetings and see all these celebrities, and it's." And I was like, okay, you know, I like bought into it, and it took me like a week to like get up there. And I remember I was big into drinking NyQuil at the time, because that was like the only thing that would take the edge off everything else, because booze just didn't do it. And that morning, my parents were driving me up to this place, and I drank a 40 of Oldie and a bottle of NyQuil, and they're driving me up, and I'm crying, and I'm just panicking. It feels like the oxygen, like I just can't believe I'm gonna stop drinking. Like this, I can't believe this is the end. And I tried to strangle myself with the car seat or the seatbelt and back. Tried really hard. My parents did not turn around. They were like, I was really hoping they'd be like, "God, he's really like going for it. Maybe we should just let him drink, you know?" But no, they didn't turn around, and I went into this program and I got sober. And I'm detoxing in this sober living recovery house, and I'm sitting there, and I don't know if I'd gone to a meeting yet. I was detoxing pretty hard. And I see this big book on the it's on the coffee table, and I open it up, and I'm like, okay, table of contents, right? I read a little bit. So like, where do I start in this thing? And I see doctor's opinion, right? And I'm like, that's where I start. I don't understand this one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, the miracle of AA. I need a doctor to tell me what's up. You know, that's where I come from. So I'm like, okay, doctor's opinion. And I start reading the doctor's opinion, and I just went, holy shit, that's me. And it was the wildest thing to think, like, I'm not just completely insane. I just thought I was this broken human being that just did not have a chance and had zero survival skills and social abilities. And that, but when it described my reaction to alcohol, how I drink, I'm like, that nails it. That nails it. There's something up with me that makes it so I can, once I start drinking, I cannot stop. Like, that's what happened all those nights, every night, you know, like, dang it, you know, wish I would have known or something, but, you know, or whatever. It was just like, wow, that's me. And I just felt this sense of comfort. And there's also the part in there where it says the only solution we have to recommend is complete abstinence. And I remember reading that, and it was just like, it felt like doom. So I had like this, like, this sense of like hope and like comfort of like, I'm not the only one. I'm not just completely broken. And then there's also like, yeah, you got to completely stop. And I was like, fuck, dude, I couldn't believe it, you know? And thank God for the big book. Thank God that happened, because like I said, like I have a hard time in meetings. I'm incredibly uncomfortable. All I look at, and I've just built a life around this, is looking at the differences. How can I be different than you? How do I not fit into this picture? How do I keep you away? And what the big book does for me is it takes the face out of it. It refers to the alcoholic almost in such a general way that it made it possible for me to identify. When people go, man, I went to a meeting and this guy told my story. I've never been able to grasp that, but I'm able to grasp the big book, you know? And, so I absolutely love it. And, I was 20 years old when I moved into that place, and it was not what the therapist said it was. It was a boot camp, a behavioral modification situation, and what it did for me, I mean, I went through it. I went through a year. I ended up starting to manage it, and I did go to a ton of meetings. I worked the 12 steps to the best of my ability. But what I think happened to me was I just became like a sober soldier. And how do I explain it? I did the 12 steps like they're a homework assignment. And I did the action part of this house and everything, and I learned to make my bed, and I got up on time, and I had this structured life, and my whole outer world started to come together, working three jobs. You know, I just became this, like, sober, just powerhouse of an action guy. But I had I don't think I had a God in my life, you know? And I think that's the missing link, like, was I didn't get the spiritual aspect of this whole thing. Somehow I missed it. And it became about my job and all these other things. And it took years, but like I got this dream job up there in LA. I was getting to travel the world and surf and getting paid to do it. It was unreal. Lived in Venice. Like all the outside stuff looked really good. And I kind of slowed down on meetings, and then I tried to hook up with my sponsor's wife's sponsee. And seems fine, right? Apparently it wasn't, and whatever, you know, like I caught a resentment, you know. I caught a resentment. I said, you know, F that. And then I stopped going to meetings, and before you knew it, like my whole world became very small. This was right when marijuana became medicinally legal. Does everybody remember that? Yeah. It was like the 60s all of a sudden. It was like, whoa, dude, we're fine. And I was like, I got depression, and I was like, and just, it seemed fine to me. I got my card, started smoking weed, and the moment I started smoking weed, I'm like, I might as well buy a six pack. I'm not sober anymore. And that was it, man. And the book talks about, how does it say it? I'll paraphrase it, but we're not taking into consideration like the effects of what's going to happen when we pick up that drink. You know, like my whole history with alcohol did not come up when I thought about, I'm going to go to a bar and drink like a 21-year-old or a above age guy. And I tried the bar thing for two nights and I realized that I can't drink the way I need to drink here, and it costs way too much. And I went back to my little apartment, and I just drank. And it took me 3 months. It took 3 months to lose my job, lose my apartment, lose my girlfriend at the time, completely destroy my whole life that I built, that had been given me. In 7 years of sobriety, and just with IPAs and bad vodka and orange juice, and it was unbelievable how quickly it all went, you know. So I went down. I was out of options in LA, and I moved down to San Diego, back to my parents, because they're the ones that I could take advantage of next. You know, like they were the ones that I was just like, hey folks, you know, here it is. Things didn't go good. I need some money and I need help. And man, from that point on, I really put them through the ringer. It was a 7-year relapse. I threw it all away on month three, basically. And I went down to San Diego, and things got significantly worse. And some other things entered the picture. I'll just say it. I shot a lot of heroin and crystal meth, folks. I did. And there's a reason why I say that. That's not like whatever, but here's what happened with that. And I stopped drinking. It was like this weird thing happened where I started putting so much other stuff in my body, alcohol. I stopped drinking, and I remember I was trying to see a therapist at the time, and I remember I checked in with her one time, and she said, "What's going on, Chris?" And I said, "I've got news. I'm not an alcoholic, you know?" I'm like, and I don't need antidepressants. And, you know, I'm doing pretty good. And she's like, what's going on? I'm like, crystal meth and heroin, you know? And she's just like, God bless her, man. She went so out of her way to help me. She's just like, oh my. I remember it was on a Zoom call, and she was just like, oh my God. You know, like, fuck, you know? But I did. I made this little mental note of, you stop drinking, you're not an alcoholic. Just remember that, dude. You know, just remember that. Because that's going to be important down the road, you know? And I started, you know, and so drinking kind of started to slip. And just, man, my life was insane. You know, I thought, I thought that new lifestyle was going to make it so I didn't get any DUIs and things like that. And everything got significantly worse. I got in a lot of car accidents. I hurt a lot of people. And one of the interesting things I think about, I think with me is that I know deep down I'm a good person. You know I've got a big heart. And the things I did when I was drinking and when I was out there were brutal to people. And I think of, like, how could that happen? You know, and my belief is that I can't afford to care, you know, when I'm out there, when I'm drinking. My behavior might harm other people, but it really wasn't worth another thought because there's nothing I could do about it, and I can't afford to care. I remember I hit this guy on a motorcycle head on. I had a Four Loko in my lap, and I'll get to, I got out of it, talked myself out of it, talked to cops, got him away, and was loaded within half an hour, and I just did not care, you know. And it's just like, man, I can't believe that. But I hit a bottom and ended up moving up to Santa Cruz, and to move into a sober living. It was a program kind of similar to this, I think. It was called FleeHab. Most awful name for a friggin' any type of program you could ever imagine. But I moved in there, and I moved under the premise that I was going to give this thing one more shot, and if it didn't work, I'll kill myself. You know, I'll be done. But I knew that I'd done this before. I'd done AA before, and I knew I missed something. I knew something was missed. And so I couldn't off myself without giving it one more try. And I came up here, and I got involved in the steps, and I moved into this place. And it's really cool to be in a place like this tonight, because that year I spent in that program was one of the most magical years of my life. And what I'll say is that in that program was where I actually started to try to put the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life. Whenever I go up to Santa Cruz to surf on little trips, I stay there at that place and I sleep on the couch, because there's just nothing like it, man. There's so many times right now in my life where I wish I could go up there and just stay in a house with some new people, you know, and actually just hang out with people who are new and just kind of share my experience, because that doesn't, you know, I graduated from there, moved on. And it's harder. That doesn't exist for me anymore. You know, you go to a meeting, you meet some new people or whatever, but to just sit there and be in it is such a gift, man. And it was really where I got to practice welcoming somebody into this house, taking them to meetings, introducing them to people that they might want to have as a sponsor, and just like really trying to get out of myself. And that's where that foundation was laid. And I worked the steps and up there, and I was having a new experience. I was up there about 3 years, and I remember, you know, I would come down here to do amends. I'd drive down here to San Diego, visit my folks, do a couple amends, drive back up, and a couple months later, I'd drive down, and I was working. I was living a really good life up there. I would have stayed in Santa Cruz forever, and but my dad wasn't doing well. And so he had his second stroke, and that was when I went down there to make amends to him. It was like, get down here, he might not come out of the hospital. I got to go down there, I got to make amends to my dad. And and when I made that amends to my dad, he said, you know, I said, is there anything I could do to, you know, make things right? And he said, you know, take care of your mom after I go. And he said, keep an eye on your sister and I'm like, okay, I don't know how to do that really. I hear you. I'm going to go back up to Santa Cruz and live my life. And his illness continued to progress. And I remember just, I had this feeling, I was like, had this feeling about like, should I move back down there? And I remember talking to my sponsor at the time. I said, hey, should I move back down there to kind of be close to my folks? And he said, why don't you write a pros and cons list? Now, the pros and cons list are not in the 12 steps. But I wrote that pros and cons list. And what I found was every single reason for me to stay up in Santa Cruz was selfish. The one reason for me to move back down here was not. And I did not like the news, right? I was like, this isn't great. You know, like, I love my folks, but like, I can't believe this. And I sat on it for a little bit. And then it took a few months, but it became apparent that I needed to move back down there. Ashley was down there with my folks. She was a hooligan. She was following along the same path I was in a lot of ways, and things were really chaotic. And what ended up happening was I got to be a part of creating an intervention for her. And it was just, and I take zero responsibility for that. It was a combined effort, and I think the ultimate deal was there's a lot of grace involved in my sister getting sober, but I got to be a part of that. And when my dad said, you know, kind of watch out for your sister, I didn't know what that meant at the time, and I think that was the opportunity to kind of experience that. So I moved back, that happened. She went into a program. I moved back down here and started trying to get a life together down here. And I started going to meetings down here, and I was having a really difficult time. Oh, I got in a relationship pretty quick, got a girl pregnant. That was awesome. So my life just went from like me in this sober living type deal to boom, moving down to San Diego. I'm having a baby. My dad is sick. Ashley just got sober. Trying to figure out how to build this foundation in the town that I grew up in, and the place where I created all my wreckage and chaos. And it was really hard. And I remember Kelsey was 9 months, or no, 9 months, 7 months sober. And I get this call, and it's like, we're coming back from Nebraska, and it said, yeah, my aunt Brooke said, you should get down here. Your dad's not doing well, you know? And shot home, and I remember called my Ashley came down, and it took 3 days for my dad to pass, and we all got to be there, you know? And just, what a gift, man. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, if I could take back the time, if I could redo the time that I came back down here to spend time with my family and do those last few months again, I would, you know, because I still don't know if I showed up the way I wanted to. But for my sister and I to both be there, both be sober, you know, standing together, watching my dad go, knowing that he's proud of us, was the most painful and probably spiritual thing, you know, that I've ever been through, you know. And so, you know, we did that. And I remember the last thing my dad said, that was coherent. My daughter's mom was in the, walked in the room and goes, "Wow, Kelsey, you really are pregnant," you know. And he was so excited to see my daughter, you know. And and I know he's still, you know, there for that. So yeah, it's been a ride. My last amends was to the company that I worked for up in LA, when I got fired. It was like my dream job. I loved the boss so much. It was my last amends. I was so scared to make it because I just was nervous, and I appreciated him, and I just didn't know what I was going to do. And I went there and I went up to LA and I made that amends. And he goes, "Hey, man, would you like to work for us again?" And I'm like, "Really? You know, like, are you serious?" And he's like, "Yeah, man." You know, he's like, "You did a pretty good job till you got drunk." You know, I was like, "All right." Yeah. Yeah, I'll do it. And that's my job today. You know, it's come around full circle. Whenever I'm kind of struggling with that, I try to remember that this is my opportunity to do it different. This is my opportunity to be an example of a sober man in this job and to do a good job for the company. And it's just an honor, man, to get that back. Yeah, who would have thought? You know, I whenever I talk to people about the steps, I say the 12 steps completely guided my life. And I did not see, so like when I was new, I had no idea where my life would go. But like, especially the ninth step, you know, it's such a daunting task, right? To go back to through our past and address the people that we've harmed. But it really has been this, like, my father, my mom, all these things are like, it's the ninth step has really like paved the road. My mom, now my sister and I, you know, my dad's passed and we've got our mom to deal with, you know, and, God, our mom has, Alzheimer's. And it's not too bad yet, but we get to do this thing of like figuring out how we're going to take care of her together, right? Like tonight on the way here, we're like, is mom a little too far gone to be putting her in Uber still? Like, like, is it fair to the driver? You know, because like the driver's like, where are you going? And she's like, I don't know, you know, but. So we're trying to work that out, you know, and but it's great, you know, like I get to see my mom every week, and Ashley is just such a freaking incredible example of a daughter. You know, like we it's interesting to, you know, spend time with someone who has Alzheimer's because you spend the time and they don't remember that you spent the time. So my mom's always like, I'd really like to see you more, and I'm like, it's just here, you know, like, you know, like, so all the, you know, it's like, we don't get a lot of, like, kudos, it's more like, you know, like, but it really is, like, the amends are, like, you know, when I make the amends, I acknowledge the things that I've done wrong, but I'm also setting out a plan for my conduct with that person in the future, right, and if I look at how am I treating my mom today, am I living up to the amends? You know, that's a pretty good indicator of how I'm doing, you know, and that applies for every area of my life. I think the last thing I'll say is like, home groups. I mentioned Monday Night Speakers Group as my home group, and that's a relatively new meeting. I was lucky enough to be a part of it when it was created. And at that point it was being created, I just had Lainey. I was drifting away from AA. I was pissed off to be 6 years. Oh, I'm 7 years sober, by the way. I never said that. But anyway, but to be like 5 years sober and still struggling to be comfortable in AA and all these things. And I was really struggling down here to feel a part of the community and the group and stuff like that. And my friend Missy said they're starting a group and I should go. And I'm like, okay, well, what kind of meeting is it? She's like, it's going to be a speaker meeting. And I'm like, okay, well, is it going to be big? You know, like, is it going to be a, I don't know if I want to be a part of like a big meeting, you know, like I'm trying to control and manage my AA experience here. And I'm going to a lot of big meetings and I'm not comfortable here. So I'm like, I'm more looking for like a 5-person group. So I got to be a part. I started showing up with Tony and Suzanne and Brian and everybody, Alexis, and started to plan this meeting. It was such an amazing thing to be a part of. Alexis, where are you? She's like, Chris should be secretary. I'm like, fuck, you know, like, you kidding me? You know, and I was like, that's cool because it's the meeting's just starting out. I'm going to be secretary at the very beginning when not many people are cruising to it, you know, and I just got to read the thing and it'll make it like an easy entry into the whole thing. And like the first meeting, I think there was like 80 people showed up and I was just like, you know, and it hasn't fixed my fear of meetings, you know, I'm still terrified of that meeting, but it's been a gift, you know, and like everybody who showed up here with me tonight are a part of that meeting, you know? They're a part of this group that I'm a part of and I got to be a part of, and it feels really, really good. So I just want to thank everybody for my sobriety. I feel incredibly grateful. It's my daughter. She's the best. So I'm doing it for her and everybody else, but I love you guys. Thank you.
I'd like to thank the speaker tonight, Chris. I hope you come back and may you come back and visit us and share again. I would also like to thank the residents of the House and the Women's Auxiliary for the fantastic dinner tonight. And if Chris will round us up and close us with the prayer of your choice, Chris. Thank you, Chris.